CliffCentral.com.
Shame good. I feel so bad. You were just talking about bunnies and how we should all grow them to eat them and use their pelts for coats. And I have two bunnies that live in my garden. And I looked at them on the way up here and thought,
How do you keep them to two? Are they same-sex bunnies?
Well, they sort of belong to the whole neighborhood. It's weird. I don't know that they're same-sex.
Have they been fixed? Have they been neutered and spayed? Because that can work.
Well, they're not even pets. I mean, they don't belong to anyone, but they kind of come to my garden. And then I have
some sort of Pleasantville where there's literal bunnies that like hop around the neighborhood and you have to be careful not to reverse your Range Rover over them.
It's so weird. They just sort of live here. They're in the area and the one is really cute. It's like it's white with these little black spots on it.
And like a Friesland bunny.
Like a Friesland bunny, yeah. And the poor thing, I'm just looking at now and thinking this is food. Thanks for our conversation.
JP, the weight loss, like, there's a listener who's been contacting me about this idea of intermittent fasting. You like eat once a year or something.
Oh, yeah.
I'm never quite, it's like once a day. There's like a 2-hour period that you eat lots and then you lose weight. I'm like, no disrespect. He's a lovely guy and he's been enthusiastically trying to help me. I just keep going, I don't know about eating other hibernation cycles. But he just texted me, bunnies, not enough fat. Like, fuck, well, then make it fat. But then you've got to increase your carrot output, which means you need to farm more carrots in your garden. I do seriously think, though, that, like, you know, again, while other people can do whatever they want, I do think that it strikes me as, like, weird that we grow entirely ornamental gardens and we could just let it make food. Like, why not just plant things that make food? Fruit trees.
No, of course. Things. All right, well, we've got lots to talk about this morning. We are going to be joined in a short while by somebody who really does pay attention to the detail and manages to summarize things in a way that I can't always do, and that's Ivo Fechter. He's going to join us on the line from Knysna, where he lives. And we've got Sia, we've got Mbulelo, we've got Gord, and we've got you to keep us company this morning. That sounds like a pretty good compliment to me.
Yeah, good menu of people.
All right. So first of all, there are a few things that are in everybody's mind this morning. First of all, Sia, who is annoyed that Michael Bublé has been he's been cancelled because he turns out to be a wife beater. Sia, this is a very scary story. We rely on
Michael.
You. We rely on you to give us all the info out of the entertainment industry. So go on. Break people's hearts.
So, you know, in the spirit of everyone and their grandmother going live on Instagram and having all of this engagement during the lockdown, Michael Bublé and his wife have been doing a lot of that recently.
Oh, yeah?
Now, the only thing about a live is the fact that you can't edit it. You can't take something back once you're live. So people have been noticing minds around his wife. It all started a couple of weeks ago when he elbowed his wife during one of the live sessions. Like it was a nudge.
Aye, aye.
Pass it off if it was just one, like a solo incident. But he had nudged him and then he went on to explain, like, no, he was trying to get her attention.
So not like a Muay Thai downward cutter across the bridge of the nose. This was like a...
just a little elbow to the... But a couple of days later, on a different live, an Instagram live that they were having, the wife had ended it and thought off. But you can hear Michael Bublé say, I'm going to kill you.
What?
Oh, wow.
Why? And then he repeats it again. He says, I'm going to kill you. So it's like,
not in like a humorous way, like, oh, I'm going to kill you for that. Like I'm going to kill you out of context can mean, like, it's not okay to ever say that and mean it to someone. But like I say on air when Gareth exposes my personal life, I'll be like, geez, Gareth, I'm going to fucking kill you. Mm-hmm. Like, it doesn't mean I'm really going to kill Gareth.
And
so
I'm
just playing devil's advocate. I'm just asking, like, is there context for this?
Yeah, I've heard.
Was he like, oh, geez, babe, I'm going to kill you?
Couples do talk to each other like this from time to time, even couples who get along really
well. You just told everyone on live air that I fart really loudly when I'm in bed. I'm going to kill you, babe.
Right.
Yeah.
I don't know, hey. I really don't know. Perhaps if these are all solo incidences, maybe it could be it. But the fact that it's all piecing together like this. And then the last thing was Michael Bublé's wife doing a separate video. You would think that they would have learned from going live, but they did a separate video where she basically says, I have no doubt of who I married. I know my husband, he would not do anything but trust certain publications to get a whole panel of body language experts and therapists.
You know what? I mean, you know, let's be fair about this. There's a huge amount of sensitivity around the abuse of women in the world at the moment. You know, we've got the whole Me Too movement and everything else. So I understand people's hackles are up and people are in a very prickly mood when it comes to women being abused, as we should be. But Michael Bublé, first of all, I very seriously doubt the ability of someone like Michael Bublé who sings like that to be aggressive to anyone.
Yeah,
just basically,
I would expect his wife or girlfriend to be able to beat the shit out of him with one hand.
That's right. Now, I don't want to be
glib. Based on?
No. I don't want to be glib about this because there's something serious.
Nathaniel would have him in one round in a rear naked choke.
There we go. I couldn't agree more. But I do think that there's this tendency we have at the moment to jump to conclusions about people, and the sense of humor has been lost entirely. Gord, you point out, like, people don't understand context anymore. And if you are determined to find evidence of someone being a wife abuser, even someone as innocuous and blancmange as Michael Bublé, then you will find that evidence. And Sia, I've heard lots of couples say much worse things to each other than, I'm going to kill you, which is, it might have been something serious. It might have been like, maybe she spilt boiling hot water on his foot while they were busy with the live Instagram or whatever. You don't know what happened there.
Oh, the real point is that we don't know. And like, given that we don't know, speculating is dickhead. And you just expose yourself as somebody wanting to witch hunt. Like, people don't realize that the Hateful Left are the Pitchfork Brigade in the movie Shrek.
Yeah.
Everyone identifies with Shrek, Donkey, and Fiona and thinks, oh, leave them alone. But you're the same person that has a pitchfork that you love to get out. Same as when Gary Oldman won the Oscar a couple of years ago for his portrayal of Winston Churchill. I forget the name of the movie. I think it's Finest Hour The Last Hour. It was an outstanding performance by one of the best actors of his generation. And then it turned out that one of his two and that he was all sorts of terrible things, and he just flatly denied it. It was like, in a my word against yours, Me Too situation, the woman's automatically right, and the guy's guilty until proven innocent. The Hateful Left called for the Oscar, rather, I think I said Grammy just now, to be rescinded. Live. And it's like you say with Donald Trump, like, I think Donald Trump sucks. I think he's the biggest dickhead in the world, but is he good at presidenting? Or do you want somebody nice? Do you want the best actor to be the person who acted the best or the person whose private life you approve of?
Right.
But then his kids, some of which are her kids, came out and said he's a model father, he's a model husband, and he's been dealing with this crazy woman for many years as gently as he can.
Wow. So
she's always been nuts. He's a great guy. And this is just to her trying to disrupt his life.
Wow.
And we'll never know what actually happened. Is to bullshit, but like, his entire family over one ex-member of his family. Meanwhile, they were like trying to shut the Oscars down if they didn't take away his Oscar and he was the best actor that year, in my opinion. Oh, it was one of the best performances I've ever seen.
So, okay, it could be that Michael Bublé is a terrible person, but I always thought he was a terrible singer. So let's just leave it at that.
Not to make light of the situation, but I just think, you know, everyone jumps on this whole cancel culture thing. Go ahead and cancel Michael. Let's see what Christmas will be.
Yeah, you can have
to Frank Sinatra what Tab is to Coca-Cola.
You will have a horrible a horrible Christmas without Michael Bublé. That's all I'm going to say to
you. Sinatra is freshly squeezed orange juice. Michael Bublé is Oros with too little Oros in the Oros.
All right. Now, I want to welcome to the show someone who we've often spoken to over the course of the Burning Platform's existence for the last 5 or 6 years. But he's also someone who is taking a much more critical and skeptical look at lockdown And he and I had a brief conversation earlier last week about how the figures are just not adding up around this lockdown. Now, one of the first things that President Cyril Ramaphosa said during his speech yesterday, the first thing he said was, the lockdown has absolutely worked. It has delivered results. We have flattened the curve. It was almost like he was taking a little victory lap before he started talking about anything else. Ivo Fechter, do you buy that?
To an extent, yes, I do. There's a clear inflection in the number of deaths and the number of cases starting pretty much exactly when the lockdown started. Okay. But then that's pretty much to be expected. You know, even if the lockdown only worked to a small degree, you know, which it didn't really work well in the townships or in informal settlements or anything. It certainly didn't work well when everyone stood in queues to go and collect their SASSA grants. But that would slow down infections, and that probably slowed down the number of cases in South Africa. But there's a lot more to these numbers than meets the eye.
All right, so I want to have this conversation.
You know, it's not just about how many cases they identify.
I want to have this conversation in two parts, Ivo, because I want to try and keep it as focused as possible. You and I could talk about all kinds of things for hours and hours, but I don't want to waste your time or our audience's time. So this morning, the first thing I want you to unpack for us is the figures that you've found around whether or not lockdowns are the best strategy, and also what different countries' models have been and what we know about this disease in terms of how it might affect South Africa, our climate, our population, the nature of the disease in this context. And the second part of the conversation is I'd like some kind of a first take from you on Cyril Ramaphosa's big Santa Claus announcement last night about $500 billion that he doesn't have, that he's going to be distributing to all of us because we're such good serfs and peasants. So let's start off with the first part about the disease. And you've been reading many articles from many different publications. Some of these are considered very reputable. Some of them are backed by a massive World Health Organization and other supposedly credible places, and others are far more left field. So go ahead and tell us what you've discovered in terms of the way this disease operates and how it might affect us.
Well, you know, the interesting thing about this disease, and this is something that was said right from the start, some epidemiologists came out and said that they actually expect that a lot more people have already been infected, and that significantly reduces the calculated death toll. Right? We're still being told by the WHO that the mortality rate of COVID-19 is 3.4%, which is... I mean, it's not as high as MERS or SARS, but it's high. You know, it's significantly higher than the seasonal flu at 0.1% or something. But they're starting to do what they call serological tests, which is they're testing for SARS-CoV-2 antibodies.
Right.
All right. Now, this can show how widely a virus has spread in the general population. A small number of these studies have been done. The studies have been small. And about how accurate these things are, how accurate the antibody tests are, etc. So they're very preliminary results. Right? But they seem to confirm what those dissident epidemiologists said, that there is far more widespread infection than initially thought. Mm-hmm. One study was done in Gangelton, Germany, a town in northwestern Germany by Bonn University. They tested 1,000 random people. They found a 15% prevalence of people who have had the disease. Now that works out to a 0.37% fatality rate per infection. In Stanford, Santa Clara, in Santa Clara, California, Stanford did a test of 3,500 people. Mm-hmm. They found only a 3% prevalence, but that's still 50 to 85 times more than they reported confirmed cases. Right? You'll know in South Africa, we confirmed about just under 3,500 cases. Mm-hmm. Right. Now, if that number is 50 to 85 times more, that suggests that the infection fatality rate is very low. In the Santa Clara case, it would suggest between 0.1 and 0.2%, which is similar to that of any other flu.
Yeah, I heard about a similar thing that they've done just recently, this week, in fact, in Massachusetts, where they took 120 people.
Yes.
And they tested, I think it was 120, and they tested them, and something...
It was 200.
Well, can you give me the exact statistics there? Because, again, a lot of these people who had been completely asymptomatic had the disease and had already developed antibodies to it. And it was a far bigger number than they'd expected. And these were just random people they asked to come and volunteer during a street survey, effectively.
Yeah. Yeah, this is in Chelsea, which is a city right next to Boston.
Right.
It has a population of 40,000 people. It's a very high-density city. 712 cases have officially been identified, which is less than 2% of the population. And of those, 39 died. Right. That gives you a case fatality rate of 5.5%. They then selected 200 people with no symptoms.
Uh-huh.
Right, and found that a third of them had coronavirus antibodies. Right. And again, that suggests that the infection fatality rate is actually not 5.5%, but 0.3%, right? Which is only marginally higher than that of the seasonal flu. In Stockholm, they found that between 11 and 33% of the population has antibodies, even though a very small number have actually tested positive.
Now, so, Ivo, when it comes to South Africa, we have a warmer climate. I mean, even in the depths of winter, it never really gets into the minuses. And this thing apparently spreads best around 8 degrees Celsius.
That's right.
So have they done any research yet? And obviously this is a novel coronavirus, so they're still figuring out a lot around it. Are they making any progress in terms of figuring out how it might affect populations in much warmer climates, younger populations, and generally more healthy populations?
No, I've seen there have been no actual studies done on that. And whenever you ask the sort of experts, you know, the Professor Karim and so on that advised the president, they'll say that there haven't been any conclusive studies done on that. So Southeast Asia, for example, is also a very warm climate and also has a surprisingly low number of deaths. So this suggests that climate has a lot to do with it. The age profile certainly has a lot to do with it. We know that a very large proportion of the deaths are actually people who are over 75. Mm. You know, and people with comorbidities. I mean, I think it was 80% of the people were over 70, and of those 80% had comorbidities, so that, you know, they're already vulnerable. So that would make South Africa fairly safe. It might be that HIV patients, especially those who are not on antiretroviral treatment, might be more
at risk,
more vulnerable, more at risk. But there's no evidence. You know, that we actually haven't done any studies on that. So there's a lot we don't know about it yet.
So Ivo, what would be?
But, you know, from what we
go ahead.
Seen. This coronavirus is a lot less deadly than we've been led to believe, right? It spreads fast, which is why some hospitals are getting overwhelmed with patients. You know, so some measures to slow down transmission seem very wise. But treating it like the first horseman of the apocalypse seems pretty foolish.
What possible reasons would governments in the world have then to have seemingly overreacted to this when we've got constant threats to our species from every angle, whether it's cancers, heart diseases, obesity, the common cold, the flu. There are lots of things that strike at humanity from various places, natural and unnatural and self-inflicted every day. To have paused the world economy for this thing may end up being a story that history points fingers at us for. Do you think that there's any advantage to governments overreacting in this situation? And how can we compare the way that South Africa's reacted to perhaps countries that have done it very differently?
No, you know, I do think that the governments are overreacting. It's strange. I looked at the 2018 flu season in the U.S., right? Now, the typical seasonal flu claims between 250,000 and 650,000 victims per year.
Yeah.
At 167,000 of what the seasonal flu typically does.
Mm-hmm.
During that season in the U.S., hospitals were overwhelmed. Staff worked overtime. Overflow tents were set up. Patients were treated in the hallways, in the corridors.
Yeah.
Elective surgeries were canceled. States of emergencies were declared. 1 million people were hospitalized and over 60,000 died. right, compared to 42,000 to date for coronavirus. Mm-hmm. Now, people don't even remember this. This was 2 years ago, right? Nobody imposed lockdowns or shut down economies. You know, I mean, you say they pause economies. Well, you don't actually pause economies. You're doing serious damage. And this is damage that we will never get back. Well, economy starts growing again, it'll start growing from a lower base. So if we've lost, say, 10% of the economy, that's 10% of the economy we'll never get back.
So Ivo,
and that it'll do massive, massive damage to our fight against poverty and so on.
So on that note, and maybe this is where we can wrap up this morning's discussion and pick it up at a later stage, but your first thoughts on what the president had to say last night in his announcement, a big $500 billion stimulus package. And I'm not sure, he did mention that some of the places we're going to get this money, where we're going to borrow this money, and we haven't heard whether it's been confirmed that we can get it or not. The World Bank, the IMF, some of the usual suspects. He mentioned the BRICS Bank, the African Bank. I mean, I don't know that they can make that much of a contribution, those two. But we don't have this money. What are your initial thoughts on what the president had to say last night? And do you think he could have done any better?
Yes, I think he could have done significantly better. You know, I think it's urgent that the hard lockdown that we have at the moment starts getting lifted. Right, we need to go to a far more relaxed regime, maintain social distancing rules, etc., implement infection control protocols at companies and so on, make sure that, you know, people don't spread the disease, that they wash their hands, that they wear masks or whatever. But this hard lockdown on the economy is doing serious damage, and you know, it's causing starvation. Instead, he's called out the army. The entire army, the entire National Defense Force has been called out and turned against citizens. Mm. Right? Which suggests that he intends to keep a lockdown going for a lot longer, than we're expecting. You know, and then he says, we're gonna build a new economy. You know, and he threw in some buzzwords like inclusive growth and radical economic transformation. So, you know, we're going to build what? A socialist paradise. Yeah. Once this is all over. Mm-hmm. I'm very pessimistic about this. I really think that, you know, our economy is being destroyed and that there's very little chance. You know, I read an article this morning that said Ramaphosa's plan depends on planning and implementation. Well, you know, that's great. I mean, the ANC has a wonderful record at planning and implementation, doesn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
So, yeah. You know, so yeah, I was shocked. I was shocked last night, and I'm very, very pessimistic about the immediate future of this country, and perhaps the long term future, because if the socialist paradise is what Ramaphosa really wants to create, once this is all over, then I'm afraid we're headed for, you know, the sort of space that Venezuela finds itself in, which is really not something that I would like to contemplate.
No, and clearly we already have enough issues to deal with before we start trying to implement ideological paradises on an already terribly vulnerable population.
You know, and it can be different. I mean, you know, Sweden didn't lock down, right? Yeah. And they're doing just fine, right? One would have expected a much higher and shorter peak in Sweden, you know, because they weren't trying to flatten the curve.
Yeah.
Doing very little, you know, they're just doing basic social distancing. They banned some gatherings and so on. They're recommending all these infection control protocols. They're still doing better than Italy, Spain, Belgium, the UK, and the Netherlands, which all have lockdowns. So, you know, there are alternatives. You know, we should have looked instead of looking at China, maybe we should have looked at Taiwan or South Korea and seen how they handled it.
Yeah, both of them have had,
because they're all doing better.
Yeah, much greater success. Just one last thing, Ivo. I believe that you find it disgusting that the National Lotto continues doing business as if nothing happened.
Yeah, it's you know, everyone has to be shut down, but here's this government crony, you know, this Manoli. Ituba that has got this license to print money, basically, a license to extort money from the poor and the desperate. And they just carry on as if nothing happened. You know, I really think in this time, you know, why should they get that right when nobody else does? How are they possibly an essential service?
Yeah.
This really sticks in my craw.
All right. Well, Ivo, you've given us a lot to think about, which is precisely why I wanted to talk to you this morning. And I'm sure we'll catch up again soon. But thank you for your first take on the president's speech, and also on your comments regarding the way that this coronavirus response may be worse than the disease. It's always good to have an opinion from someone who's been reading a lot more of the literature than most of us have the time or the inclination to do. So please keep up that good work, and we can read more of Ivo's stuff in various publications. You're now writing for the IRR, right?
That's right. I'm with their publication, The Daily Friend. That's where you'll find my weekly column.
Thank you very much. Ivo Fechter, everybody. Sure, there's some stuff to think about this morning. Cliffcentral.com, it is a Wednesday. There's a lot going on in terms of the reaction to President Ramaphosa, but there's also other stuff that's happening. Gord, for example, is telling us that it's really important that we eat rabbits, that we grow rabbits in our back garden. Some practical advice from Gord. You need to unmute your microphone, Gordon. We need to unmute you. This is how it works these days. Yeah, I know. He's busy pointing at the screen. Ah, there you are.
You muted me. Actually smart, and you didn't want to be interrupting you with my tomfoolery, and I respect that, but I didn't mute myself. You muted me. I'm a mutee, not a muter.
You muted me on the bounty.
This is a mutiny, and it's got nothing to do with me. I said, in my new limited experience as a subsistence farmer, peas take and grow really well. My pea plants thriving. Everything else fucked. So grow peas and feed them to your rabbits, and then also you need to make your rabbits obese because apparently they're low in fat.
Okay.
Feed a starvation diet, Oak, and the one listener. So. I mean, what else can you breed that breeds really fast and also has a useful pelt that's higher in fat than a rabbit? What is the ultimate Norwegian townhouse complex livestock animal?
God, I love you, but I'm not going on this with you.
No.
You might not have a fucking choice, yeah, and at some point you're going to be coming and staying in my guest room because I've got all the rabbits.
So
earn your keep, you're going to have to.
I want to point something out. I don't know whether this is a joke. I'm hoping it's a joke, but I saw, based on our conversation last week with Gord, I saw someone post something on social media about how Karen is now a kind of hate speech. And if you call someone a Karen, did you see this? I'm thinking it must be a joke, right?
Love to be sensitive and full of shit. But, I mean, there's also Sharons and Debbies and Susans. Let's not forget sub-varieties of Karens.
So the criticism of Karen.
Sensitivity, dickhead. It's the same as how gingers deal with the humor because, like, even though they don't have souls, they've got senses of humor. There's a difference between hate speech and having a laugh. Ah, but that's where it starts. That's how it starts. No, it starts with banning what people can say and lynching them without trial in the court of opinion. Fuckhead.
So, Gordon, calm down. Karen is now apparently a term of hate. If you call someone a Karen, then you're actually being... I mean, I don't know how this feels for women whose names actually are Karen, but...
Yeah, that's supposedly, I mean, they've got to have a laugh.
It's now a form of hate speech. So we were thinking, what other names could replace Karen? I mean, you mentioned a Sharon and a Debbie just now, but there could be others.
My lovely friend Taryn, whose family run and operate the Montrose Nursery, also shut down, even though some of their customers are like people that grow food.
Yeah.
But it's also flowers, so it's shut down. But she always refers to her complaining for absolutely no reason because, I mean, they're a nursery in the heart of Sandton.
Yeah.
So, and they've got a lovely little coffee shop for brunching and stuff.
Yes,
the Montrose.
I've been there often, yeah.
Yeah, it's a wonderful place. So she refers to those customers as Sandton Sharons. And she's been doing it since before Karens were a thing. I said there's Debbie, Susans, Sharons, and Karens, and they all fight for, like, the one who gets to the manager first is the winner.
I say beware of the nicknames as well.
How about posting a badly spelt roomy fucking bit of philosophy or a Bible verse and then shitting all over an underpaid employee or waiter or something because you feel you need something to feel important? How about we call that hate speech and Karen goes and shuts the fuck up?
Sia, what did you say about the nicknames?
I say beware of the ones with the arbitrary nicknames as well. Not the Jessicas, but the Jesses. Not the Tanyas, but the Tans.
Oh, yeah.
I feel like they are bubbling under.
Ooh. Mish.
Tans. starters.
But we know a ton, and she's not a complain to the manager kind of person.
No, we like.
Identity, but her name's Priscilla, and she was nice to look at, but she was just this incredibly beige human being from like your typical templated Bryanston human. And I mean, she sort of followed me and just did a thing, and we discussed this on a previous episode where I was like, can people stop fucking complaining?
Yeah.
I'm aware that I'm complaining, but like try post 4 positive things for every 1 negative thing. She then with no sense of her own irony came and viciously complained that I posted that.
Oh wow.
You know, like, don't complain about people complaining, for God's sake. And then I was like, it says in her profile, like her nickname is Sil. It's Priscilla, and she goes by Sil. It's like Tan Mish. You know, Jess is all right. Like, people call Jessica going by Jess is pretty normal.
Yeah.
But it's like where there's like a little nickname-y little, this is Tan, this is Mishy.
So I like that a lot.
Yes, that Mishy. That Mishy's dangerous. I scrolled past that.
Sarah is say. Oh, how you must say? How you must say, say?
Sia, what did you do?
Scrolled past it very quick.
It's like me being Gore.
Shut up, Gordon. I want to hear from Sia. What did you say, Sia?
This post, someone had actually made a poster to everyone. Stop saying Karen. Karen is a sexist and racist term equivalent to the N-word for white woman. Calling a
yeah, because it refers to history, like centuries of disenfranchisement, forced labor, slavery. Fuck, it's exactly the same. We make fun of you because you complain in Woolworths, but it's the same as the N-word.
Yeah.
Calling a woman Karen is an attempt to get rid of women's rights to stand up for themselves.
Get rid of people complaining at Woolworths because of their privilege. Fuck off, dickface.
Snap, snap, snap.
Well,
snap,
do you know what we should do from now on? I think we must find examples of, and there's so many of these in the media, of, oh, I've got to play, before we finish the show this morning, I've got to play. I recorded my dad yesterday complaining, and it's hilarious. Because he watches the news, but he hates the news. So he watches it. So he watches it so he can hate it. And then I said to him eventually, is there anybody on the news that you like? And he said, no, they're all useless. But I'll play it for you just now. Anyway, I watch a lot of mainstream media stuff, and I see a lot of it on the internet too. And there's this thing that's crept into our culture that just did not exist 10, even 15 years ago, where people's sob stories become their defining characterization. Yeah. You know what I mean?
You need narrative interesting because there's nothing interesting about your narrative.
So someone,
you're an assistant logistics person at a company that makes light bulbs,
yes.
And you watch your stories on DSTV or Showmax every day, and you get on the phone to Debbie and Sharon and you complain about what the other middling, uninteresting, beige Bryanston Fourways fucking Tasha's brunch are about. Because this woman was being a Karen. Okay. The woman who wrote the thing about...
Calm down. I wanted to get to a particular example here. The example is, I know you're gonna rag me for this because I'm always saying they're fake news, but CNN... There's a guy called Brian Stelter on CNN. He's this small, bald, slightly effeminate, not that there's anything wrong with that, slightly weedy human being. And on CNN, he started crying during a segment where he said, it's okay to feel bad. And he was getting all emotional. This is a journalist, supposedly. He's the political analyst for CNN. And he starts crying on the air about how it's okay to not be handling this lockdown. And this is considered some sort of virtuous and respectable thing to do in modern media. It's good to show people how you are not coping. It's good to tell people your sob story. He was actually complaining about how he got home after his cushy job on CNN the other night, got into the shower and cried, and then curled up in bed and cried some more. This is a person with an extraordinarily privileged life who works for an agency where he's regarded as, you know, a paragon of some kind of media virtue. And he goes on TV and he cries during his segment. It's like a therapy session he wants us all to bear witness to. And I think what we've got to start doing, And what made me think of it was this car and stuff. And the fact that we're all telling each other our sub stories, like it's meant interesting. And Gord, you're right. A lot of these people aren't interesting unless they have some sub story. This guy is a perfect example.
You need to don't forget about me. I mean, almost every show I reference Anthony Jeselnik's very, very funny thoughts and prayers. I mean, he's one of those extremely offensive comedians, but he can be because he's smart. Mm. And, you know, just Google Anthony Jeselnik. It's hard to spell, but you'll manage thoughts and prayers. And he's like, what it really means is, I know there's a lot going on and everyone's talking about something else, but don't forget about me. I'm still here. Don't forget about me. I'm involved too. I'm still important. Don't forget about me.
Well, the interesting observation from this is actually, this is precisely the problem with the world at the moment, is that everybody has a story and they all think their stories are equally valid. And Brian Stelter on CNN complaining about how he's not dealing with the lockdown very well is exactly what we do not need. Here's why. If the world is going to get a little bit rougher in the next while, and we have every reason to believe it will, if things are going to get more difficult, if people are going to have to work that much harder for that much less, which we have every reason to believe will be the case, we do not need weak people. And people on mainstream media channels who are crying and who expect us all to bear witness to their therapy sessions are not going to be useful to the rest of humanity during this crisis or afterwards.
No, but hold on. That's not their fault. That's not their fault. You or us largely to places like CNN as some sort of gatekeepers to anything of tremendous value.
You're
that's
right.
Not.
Hang on. You broke up. You went. Just start that again from where you went. It's our fault. Bulelo seems to have gone offline.
Because of his crap connection, as we can clearly see. Now you're back.
Mbulelo, try that again. You were making a good point, and then we lost you right in the middle of it. He says nothing for like 20 minutes. And then he comes back and he cuts out. All right, go ahead. Try again.
It's like one of those hot wheels where you pull it back until it's got you ready to let it go. Umbi recharges his clever, and he sits there ready to pounce.
All right, try again.
I was just saying, that's not on them. That's on us giving them the reverence, the gatekeepers of anything like a spiritual or moral or leadership status or anything of real substance. It's like having Natalie Portman as your idol. That's not on them.
Yeah.
Especially for us that have the lower people that don't have that time to be philosophical. For us that have
the lower people who don't have time.
I think you just,
I mean, on the economic stats.
I think of Umbi's paradigm just exposed itself in one sentence.
Bulelo, did you just use the term untermenschen?
Did you just discriminate against and hate speech all people who haven't read Kanti?
This is the harshest.
Myself to say.
This is the harshest thing Bulelo has ever hated.
Yeah, Mbulelo, this is pretty mean. You've just called them the lower people. Oh my God!
If you're watching, if you like trying to increase your calorie load on the couch at noon, watching Gail and Oprah cry about something, that's what that show's for. The Oak on the News is supposed to be good at objectively and unemotionally bringing you the news. So I don't know who this person is. Maybe their segment is the little feeling segment because they have the human angle. If he's the News Oak.
Yeah, he's the News Oak. All right, well, everybody's internet connection's letting me down this morning. It's driving me crazy.
Nationalism is the religion in America, right? So news broadcasters were crying and shit during 9/11, watching the building come down. And I get that. I get that there was like an incredible thing to see. And a couple of news broadcasters were like, I'll take a moment. But if you're a news broadcaster, your job is to objectively and unemotionally bring across the news, unless you're an opinion, you know, like a color commentator person. So this asshole making it about himself, I mean, he's hardly a steel mill worker who's lost his job because the steel mills there's no more market for what they make.
But wait, we cut Mbulelo off just because of his comments.
Saying something worse than the N-word by being mean to people who don't read philosophy.
He called them lower people. Mbulelo, you better save yourself. I mean, give you a wide berth here to be able to explain what you were going to say.
I have absolutely. I'm not going back on that. Nonsense and think CNN is some sort of
I don't know, emporium, that's your fault. It is your fault that you think that these people, these talking heads, have any substance behind them and you give them reference.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, that is not
on the... give them their credence. I kind of, look, the lower people comment, I'm not sure I'm getting the principle of if you are fooled by... Yeah. You're ignorant. If you are affected by certain shit, it's because you're a moron.
Lower. What you read and what you put into your mind puts you on the
scale. If you want to on a current thing, it's because you need to go up. You need
all right, guys. I'm gonna cut you both off for a moment. I want you to listen to this. I interviewed my dad. Right, I popped in there and I went to. I broke lockdown. I don't know whether anyone's gonna report me, but here it is.
So, Dad, is there anyone on TV you like?
No, there are not many people I like on TV, but there are some that I really do dislike.
Okay, so who do you hate on TV?
This dumpling on ENCA,
which
who
one?
Makes everything this one. What's her name? I don't know.
Sally Burdett.
Yeah, she was talking about a case of this woman who got stuck somewhere, and it was stranded. Stranded so dramatically. I mean, is this the news story?
Why do you watch her if she irritates you?
Well, I don't have much option. There's not much to watch. If we had a proper news channel, it would be worth watching instead of all this crap.
So there's my dad saying that the news is all crap. And the reason he watches it is because there isn't anything else, and so he has to watch crap. Do you believe any of that?
But, like, I've managed to – I don't miss broadcast TV at all.
Yeah.
Like, not even a little bit. Like, I haven't had DSTV in many years. I share a login situation with – I mean, again, I'm not sure if this is strictly legal, but I've got a friend who just lets me use one of their logins so that I can watch Supersport when, you know, football is on and occasionally MMA. And I miss absolutely nothing about it. Like, I have to – for in terms of local news, I have to go onto ENCA, which is like literally nah, in their name. I have to go, no, you're not. I had to go onto their site to like watch to wait for Squirrel's live stream, and I saw like the little bits of other content that are on there, and I just wanted to wash myself afterwards because of just the insignificant nature of everyone I saw on there, like this bespectacled woman looking like serious, and then some political asshole dude looking like he takes himself seriously. And I was just like, God, imagine I had to watch this fucking channel where you don't have to just press play; it's just time into my life from the television. I have Netflix, I have Apple TV, I have Masterclass, and I can pirate and torrent anything else that I don't have from there. And I'm the only live television I give any kind of a shit about is sport, and I miss it 0%.
Go ahead, Mulelo.
Something for people to do since they're sitting at home getting anxious is go and read about Aristotle's 32 archetypes, and it'll help you how to absorb news.
Or have a wank.
In us lower people.
I do mean you lower people.
Go on. You've earned it.
I don't expect you to list them, but why will this archetype stuff teach us about the news?
So I'll tell you where you can start. I think I said the book The News by Alain de Botton. So it kind of laymanizes it for idiots like me and the lowers, how to kind of interpret things like news, like tragedy, you know, what might understanding the idiosyncrasies and tragedy do for your civilizing? It's a part of the civilizing process. So things like this, tragedy is a narrative.
All right. Or God says,
does a good job.
Or God says that you could just masturbate furiously.
Well, either way, you're having a wank, right? You're either having a highbrow intellectual Aristotle wank, or you're having a lowbrow high bandwidth Pornhub wank. Either way, you're spending your time giving yourself handjob.
Down into the core of your soul. So, however you get there.
The aim is to stroke yourself until you feel better. But actfulness, which I've talked about in previous episodes, he also talks about like ways of looking at the media through a lens that's kind of non-judgmental. It's not like fuck them, they're all liars. It's their job to bring you the bad news. But also Noam Chomsky, while we're having a wank, he talks about the four filters of the media, which is a bit simpler than Aristotle's 32 ways to have a wank. But yes, like there are filters through which you got to look at what the news is that either makes it less doom and gloom because they don't report like
Today in the news, there were 485,000 commercial airline flights this week, and all of them went off without a hitch.
Yeah.
Just like last week and the week before.
No,
there were no murders in South Africa today.
To summarize, so this morning we've learned a lot, and I wasn't expecting to, apart from one or two technical difficulties, which again, I've got to apologize for. We had Ivo Fechter on, who gave us a take on Cyril Ramaphosa, because we need to do a little bit of analysis, and frankly, it hasn't all settled. The dust has not settled in me yet, in terms of trying
squirrel, for God's sake.
Yeah, I'm trying to figure out what squirrel meant, and where all this money's coming from, and what precisely it is supposed to achieve. And I'm still trying to figure that out. So thank God for Ivo having a stab at trying to make sense of it. We also spoke a little bit about COVID-19. Gord suggested some things we can grow and things we can let mate in our gardens so that we can eat them, which is very, very useful. Mulelo gave us some Aristotelian principles by which we can figure out the news. I mean, we've really had a bumper show this morning. It's been very full.
It has been. Touched on feelings. We've touched on CNN presenters, Michael Bublé being lynched without trial. This is not to say he's innocent. The point is, there hasn't been a trial.
Yeah. But,
right.
Not a fair one, anyway. Might be a serial pedophile. We don't know. Let's not assume.
Next time we have Ivo on, I didn't want to jump in because I think he was on a roll. But we'll also talk about how to read forest plots, because he was spewing data out in a very lame way. So we'll also have to talk to him about that.
All right.
There's a way to read data.
Okay. Well,
so I think we've established that Uli is clever, which we need to do in every episode.
He likes to remind us, yeah.
Yes, very well done. But Ivo's a super smart dude.
Yeah, we're lower. We need to.
One of the push and listen type of dudes. Ivo's very informative. I enjoyed him.
Okay, everybody. So have a happy day. I know that it's, we've still got to wait for announcements on whether or not the hard lockdown is going to carry on and precisely what that's going to mean. So it's going to affect all of us. But in the meantime, keep your chin up, do some exercise, try to find reasons to laugh, and do some of those things that make you feel good. Like Gord said, either it's high bandwidth Pornhub or highbrow philosophy.
Any kind of wank will do.
Right, exactly. All right.
Any wank will do. I close my eyes. And I'm just looping. Da da da. Possibly YouTubing. Da da da. Any wank will do. Just take your tongue. Just give yourself a rest. If your adventures test me, any wank will do.
Okay, beautiful. I don't think we can do better than that. Thank you, everybody. Happy day. See how the pastor's son just went to Jesus.
Yeah, cross Jesus.
All right.
Open your browser. No need for a downer. Anyway, we'll do. Pure or blind, you can read philosophy, or go streets under me, anyway.
That's enough, I can't do it anymore. All right, have a happy day. We will catch you later. There's some more Living in Lockdown coming up on cliffcentral.com this morning. All the interviews that we've done will be playing out through the course of the next few days. Some interesting South Africans, some people you haven't heard from yet about how they're living in lockdown and precisely what it means for them when it all comes to an end. Like, what is next? And I've asked everybody in these interviews what they think will be next in South Africa and in the world, including someone I spoke to yesterday, Vusi Tembekwayo, who had some very interesting and quite inspiring things to say about what he believes the world economy will look like when all of this has come to a grinding halt, the lockdowns anyway, and the coronavirus. What kind of a world will we live in? Lots to keep you entertained, informed, inspired, and empowered on cliffcentral.com. It is just about 8 o'clock. Thanks for listening to cliffcentral.com. Podcasts of all our shows are always available on the website, the Cliff Central app, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.